It's time to take control of your happiness. This is Being Young at Any Age on EZ 1430. Now, here's your host, George Bentley.
Hello, hello, hello. This is George Bentley, your host of Being Young at Any Age, where we help you create your own self-directed guide and roadmap to optimal happiness, health, well-being, and vitality, no matter what your current challenges may be. As we talk about it, we're here to help you figure out how to thrive now, in the moment, today, carpe diem, something you can do to improve the quality of your life. Because if you've been listening, you know I believe very firmly it's up to us. Only we can take control of our destiny and our health and our vitality, and most importantly, our happiness. As you guys know, I'm a firm believer that humor and laughter really are the best medicines that we can be absorbing into our body, and every opportunity we can to laugh and make somebody else laugh is a really important thing to be doing. And I'm really excited to have back Dr. Stephen Schimpf, right? He's quasi-retired. I love it. I'm kind of queasy retired, I think. But former professor of medicine, former CEO at Maryland Medical Center. And the reason he's with us is because he's the author of 6 books. And the one that I am really excited about and I want him to continue to talk about, this is actually a part 2 show today, is his 7 Keys, Longevity Decoded. In his book, Longevity Decoded, he talks to us about the 7 keys to having a healthy, vibrant life. And as I say, anybody hearing this, you're going to live to be 90, 95, 100, maybe 120 years old. Who knows? The only question is, how healthy and vibrant are we going to be when we get there? How much will we be able to contribute to our own quality of life, the lives of our families and friends and loved ones, but also very significantly, you know, we're talking primarily to baby boomers here. We impact society, our healthcare system. How much medication, healthcare, how many surgeries am I going to consume between now and the time I depart this earth? And we can have a major impact on society and in particular ourselves. We start with ourselves. So, Dr. Steve, you know, last time we touched on nutrition. We talked a little bit about exercise. And we also talked about the issue of it's important that we get an appropriate amount of sleep, meaning if I'm a teenager, that might be one thing. If I'm, you know, 70 years old, that might be different. But we really need about 7.5 hours of quality rest to give our brain and our body an opportunity to recoup, flush out, get itself ready for the next day. Am I getting that about right?
I'd say perfect, yeah.
And one of your keys is tobacco. And I'm like, really? I mean, do we need to talk about tobacco in today's age? And I guess we really do, right?
Well, I think we can do it quickly. The answer is, you know, what about tobacco? None. Period. You know, we used to.
That's not a moderation thing?
Most things, I would say, all things in moderation except tobacco. It has to be absolutely none. And that includes vaping or vapping, whatever it's called.
Right.
We just should not be sucking in smoke. And it just has all sorts of bad chemicals in it, not just nicotine. Nicotine's very addictive, of course. But so we just say no. And if you are a smoker, and it's very hard to quit. I watched my dad and my mom in their mid-60s finally stop smoking after being 3 packers a day. And they did it cold turkey because they got a bad cold. Each of them got a bad cold, and they said, I got to stop. And they did. But my father always kept his cigarette pack in his shirt pocket. And for at least a year, I could see him. He'd reach over to his shirt, and nothing was there.
Right, right. Habit. You know, a habit of behavior.
Habit, yeah.
Yep, absolutely. Yep.
But it's a tough one to break. But anyway, it's very, very important. If you take 2 groups of people, one group is a non-smoking group, and the other group's a smoking group, and follow them from the time, let's say they're 20 years old, and one's smoking and one's not, the smokers are going to die on average. Averages are always, you know, an average. But anyway, on average, 11 to 12 years sooner than the non-smoking group. that's a whole decade. That's a lot of life lost.
Yeah.
You know, if you say that the average American lives to 78 for men and 81 for women, well, knock off 10 years off that. That's a big percentage of your life. So.
Well, and here's something. You may disagree with this, but it's a thought I got in my head, so I'm going to throw it out there. But, I actually, there's a lot of research behind this, but our body is an amazing organ functioning. It's a community, right? It's made up of different organs with the billions of cells, right? And I love the idea that, you know, we've got cells that they'll march to whatever drummer they need to be, you know, their stem cells, if they need to be a bone cell or a stomach cell or, you know, whatever it is. Our body, we're learning, has huge capacity to heal itself. And the idea of maybe I've smoked for 30, 40 years, that doesn't mean don't quit. That doesn't mean that your body, it's over with. You know, I've got a friend who works for me, and she's just absolutely committed to smoking, and she's not going to stop. And I'm like, it's not over. She thinks it's like, well, I've been smoking so long, my body will never recuperate. And that's not true, is it?
No, it's not. And if you take those same two groups I was talking about, and the smoking group stops at, say, 40, they won't regain all those 11 to 12 years, but they'll retain most of it. If they stop at 60, well, it's the same story, but not quite as much. And even if they stop at age 70, they'll still gain. So there's it's never too late.
Here's an example. My dad, you know, I talk about my dad a lot. My mom and my dad were lifelong smokers, right? I mean,
right.
They were. My dad was born in 1919. He just grew up through the whole tobacco concept. And he quit smoking when I was in junior high school because I kept hounding him about it. But when he was, I think he was in his early 70s, he was diagnosed with malignant oral cancer. And they were able to do a surgery. They removed half his tongue and they took some lymph nodes. But the point is it was diagnosed early enough that they got all the bad stuff, right? They got it. And his body was recuperating, and he hasn't had the slightest issue with cancer or any lingering problem because, of course, his body is clean now, and he's healing himself, you know?
Yeah.
And that's
terrific. Yeah. And, you know, just we usually think of cancer and smoking, but what most people die of that smoke is heart disease.
Right.
Tobacco is terrible for our heart, especially our coronary arteries, and it just speeds up the process of laying down that plaque that, you know, eventually causes the heart attack. So it's important not, and it does a lot of other things too to our bodies. It provokes Alzheimer's disease, for example. But the important point I want to make is don't just think of smoking as causing cancers, which it does for sure. But that's not the only thing. It's not the most common thing it does.
Well, here's a thought for you, okay? And it really just kind of opened my eyes up. We've created this therapy we call medical hydrotherapy. It's a water-based therapy, but, you know, the medically what's going on is temperature appropriate, so it could be cooler temperatures, warm, hot, you know, whatever the body needs to heal. But it's sanitary, non-aggressive whole-body massage. And so for years, I'm seeing people get these results that are equivalent to exercise, meaning, you know, this process naturally stimulates the lymphatic system and helps our body detox it, you know, and purge it, similar to aerobic exercise, which was one of the things you wanted to talk about in the exercise segment. Well, it isn't exercise, but it helps the body do that. Well, I had a cardiologist pull me aside a couple of years ago, and he says, you're missing a big part here. And I'm like, what? And he's going, this non-aggressive whole body massage process has a tremendous positive effect on the circulatory system. And what he was telling me is just what you were talking about, is we have people dying of heart disease because we're plugging up our major arteries with plaque and corrosion and, you know, whatever. I've got a buddy down in Texas who has four heart stents, you know, and he's going, George, if the major arteries are plugging up in such high numbers that it's, you know, leading cause of death, imagine what's happening to our microcapillaries, those tiny little vessels throughout our body that deliver the oxygen and nutrients to the individual cells. You know, they're just completely shut down. And anything you can do to help flush and purge and clean your system out is a good thing to be doing. And the idea, your point is, if I stop smoking, then I'm giving my body a chance to heal itself. Right. One of my mentors, Les Brown, likes to say, you know, life will knock you down and life will knock me down. But when it does, I'm going to land on my back, because if I can look up, I can get up. And what I'm really saying here to the listeners is, you know, if you're getting knocked down, just land on your back, right? Land on your back so you can look up and take a step in the right direction and follow some of Steve's recommendations here about how to make your life a little bit healthier. So, okay, I think we get tobacco. It may be harder for some people than others, but there are resources out there to help people stop this addictive behavior, correct?
That's right. And I think, you know, it's certainly worth getting there are addiction counselors or smoking cessation counselors, probably a better term, and they can be extremely helpful. It's really worth your while if you've been trying and haven't done the job and it hasn't worked for you. You might try finding a counselor, because they can be very helpful.
Right.
And then you can also, with that, use the nicotine patches. It can be helpful. You know, you sort of pull away gracefully and easily. And so I think there's ways to go.
Ask for help. I mean, that's what it's all, and that's part of the message here. It's up to us, right?
Yeah,
and if
and
I don't ask for help,
does not mean you're weak.
That's right. That's right. And I talk a lot about, you know, I say two of the biggest killers in particular of baby boomers and seniors are denial and ignorance. And as we age, we become less stable and weaker. Things happen, right? If I smoke, I've done things to my body. Don't go into denial about it just because it might be difficult. Just make a firm decision to take a step in the right direction. So let me share with you, okay? I just got back from visiting my 99-year-old father, still lives independently in Arkansas. But my dad had a heart valve replacement about 2 or 3 months ago at 99, okay?
Wow.
his aortic valve, he had aortic stenosis. And again, getting to the technologies we have now, it's just amazing. My dad, health-wise, came out of that process re-clocked, okay? He's like, wow, I'm going to make it to 112, and he's pumped. But I'm worried about him, okay? My dad was always very vibrant, outgoing. I could tell people, I can call my dad right now, he'll answer, hey, buddy, what's going on? How you doing? You know, he was always positive and up, and I'm not seeing all that anymore, right? And so he has access to things, but I'm worried about him. So what's happening to my dad is he'll go to meals and things like that, and he interacts, and then he returns to his apartment, and he sits, you know, and I'm concerned about his loss of social interaction. That's one of your seven keys, right?
It is, yeah. It's really important.
So talk to me about that. I mean, what do we do to help my dad, or how do I explain to him the importance of maintaining his social interaction and what that might look like for him?
Yeah, so it's a funny thing. It's kind of, how do you measure social interaction? And
yeah.
We each would probably measure a little bit differently. But I guess the important thing is we have to interact with other people. And that's just a human trait that we need. And if we don't, we become very lonely. And if we become lonely, that creates a whole bunch of chemicals that's terrible. I'm supposed to be a scientist. I'm talking about a whole bunch of chemicals, so I apologize. But anyway, it'll do.
A plethora.
Our body releases these various chemicals that affect our brain. It affects our heart. It affects our lungs. And, it's going to just slow our body down and have a negative impact. So we need to just interact with each other. So what can be done? You know, I don't know enough about where your dad lives, but you just mentioned he can go to dinner, and mm-hmm. they probably help sit him with other people if he doesn't, you know, have specific friends. And that's one of the real advantages of living in a community like he does. You know, imagine if he was in a single home still, where, you know, the only way to get somewhere is to drive, and friends probably have died, and they're not coming by as often. But so being in a community like he's in, is just an incredible benefit.
Okay, let's talk about that. Let's talk about that, okay? Because for 15 years, my message has been to try to help people understand how, you know, we want to control our end of life. We want to be vibrant. We want to be independent, right? And so with Bentley Baths and Empower Home Solutions, we do remodeling and design to homes to keep people safe and in their home, right? And I've interviewed thousands of people over these 15 years and their adult children and caregivers. And every one of them will say, I want to stay in my own home. I want to stay independent. And we try to help them do that. But I've seen it, and it happened with my dad. So 2006, I think it was, we've got a therapy tub in for my dad. He's living in the family home, the home my mother was born in, my sister, you know, rural Arkansas. And he's going to stay there, right?
Mm-hmm.
We started turning his health around. He started feeling better. About 4 or 5 years later, he's feeling great. He's doing the therapies and stuff that I mentioned earlier. And he's feeling great. But all of a sudden, he's like, I'm bored. I'm lonely. My church is a half a block away, but I don't have enough social stimulation, right? So my dad, he was dead set against it. He did not want to go into an active senior community or anything like that. He had a preconceived idea that my mom died in a nursing home, right? And she died because she fell and hurt herself and went through this downward spiral that you and I and everybody hearing my voice knows is epidemic in the United States today. And he was like, it's a nursing home and I'm not going to go there and die the way she did. But we finally got his attention, and I took him to see one, and he visited one where he had some friends from his hometown, and all of a sudden, the light went off. And my point with this is there is no one way. You know, each person needs to decide for themselves what my quality of life is and what it means to me to have quality as I age. And for my dad, it was no longer to be in that house. It was to be where he could socialize with other people.
Yeah, so I think what you just said, if I can sort of turn it around a little bit, is that at different stages in our life, there are different needs. And most of us would like to live in our own home with our family as long as we can. But then the time comes when maybe that's not the best arrangement. And I think that's what you just said about your dad. You helped him to stay where he wanted to be for as long as he could. But then the time came, and it was appropriate to make a move.
And the point, people would say, you're contradicting yourself. You know, your message is always, you know, you should stay independent and live in your own home, and die in your own home. And I talk about how all four of my grandparents died in their own beds at home, and that is an aspiration that a lot of people have. But again, it isn't a one-size-fits-all. The point is for you to know that you have the ability to make choices, or for you to live your life so that you can make choices, and to educate yourself. Ask why. You know, why? Why would I want to consider going into an active senior community, or why? And if I can answer that question for myself, then I tend to make a healthier decision, right?
My wife and I together live in a retirement community.
Quasi-retired.
We were created, right. And we've been here, let's see, I'm 77. We moved here when I was 75 and she was 74. We were relatively young for people who moved in here. And a lot of our friends that we've invited, hey, come on by and see where we are, they come by and they're very nice, but they say, I don't want to go there. Okay, no, it's not a nursing home, but I'm not ready for that yet. Maybe in 10 years or whatever. And that's fine, because it's not the same for everybody. What we have found for ourselves, and I can only speak for ourselves, is, when I get done with this radio show with you, I'm going to walk over to one of the 5 restaurants here and get some lunch and sit down and see who's there. And, you know, probably strike up a conversation with somebody. And before I was on the show with you today, I was off doing a TV show. We have an in-house TV station here for the 2,000 residents. And I did a TV show with a retired public health nurse about some of just the issues we're talking about here today. So, and then there's so much going on. My wife goes to a poetry group session once a week, and she's an artist. She's a watercolor artist, and they happen to have a gallery here that about 30 different folks who live here are artists, and they hang their stuff there. And so, it's again, that's their social interaction.
Right.
So there's so many different types of opportunities, and the thing is to get involved with them. But part of the problem with loneliness is that it's become sort of I don't know just the right words for it, but it's sort of a personal thing that I can be surrounded by people, but I'm still lonely.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to give you a silly analogy, but it takes us back to when we were kids and going to play some ball. And so two best players were usually told to be, they'd be the captains. And then they would choose from the group who they'd go back and forth who would be on each team.
Right.
And, if you were the last one called upon.
I always was.
Yeah, I always was too.
Especially if it was basketball.
Yeah. But, that you knew you really weren't wanted.
Right. Exactly.
And you felt lonely. Even though you're in a crowd of people, you felt lonely.
Right.
And so the question, I think, back to your dad and people like him, is how do you help him not feel lonely within a group like that? And probably the best thing you mentioned to me before we went on the air that you got down there to visit him, and he was playing bingo. I think it was bingo. And
bingo and spinners, which is a domino game.
Yeah. And so that's the sort of thing that's so important. At 99 years old, you don't expect to be out playing baseball anymore. It's going to be, something else. But it's so important that he is involved in as many of those, I shouldn't say as many, but, well, yeah, as many as is comfortable for him at this point in his life.
You bet. We're all at different points on this path, right? And my dad at 99 is, pretty far down the road. Of course, who knows? He may make it to 120 for all we know. But he's in a different situation perhaps than I am, for example, or somebody that's in their 70s or 80s. And how we get that social interaction can be very subjective and individual. For example, my dad isn't going to use technology. He is not going to Facebook, whatever, right?
Right.
But
sure.
My Gabby's mom is 90 years old, and she's discovered Facebook, and oh my God! Now it's like she's connecting with everybody, and there are ways with technology that we can actually take control. We can reach out. It could be as simple as picking up the phone and calling somebody you haven't seen in 10 years and just saying, hey, I was thinking about you. How are you? What's going on? You can reach out and do things. And relate this back to my dad. My dad at 99 is having a little bit harder time with that. And so the way we're handling it as a family, it sounds kind of trite or manipulative or whatever, but we've basically taken days in between my sister, my son, his grandchildren, whatever. We've all agreed that we're going to call and check in on Pawpaw one or two times a week. So what happens is now he's getting 10, 15, 20 phone calls a week. You follow me? That helps keep him stimulated and his social interaction. And now what he's doing in his community there is an added to. And if your family is near, or you're near a loved one, whether it's a parent or whatever it is, and you have the ability to go visit them and interact with them or get on the phone with them or Facebook them or message them or text them or whatever the heck it is, do it. Do it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so important.
So one other thing with my dad, okay? He doesn't watch TV. I'm worried. Well, that's true. he is kind of isolated. And my dad, 7-8 years ago, got hooked on Sudoku. And he will play that game for an hour or two every day. And what I touted to him was you need to stimulate your brain, right? It's hard for him to go out. He can't really volunteer and go out and socialize and do things like that. But he needs some sort of intellectual challenge in his life, right? I mean, isn't that one of the seven keys?
Yes, it is. And Sudoku is a great thing to do, but I think what you're saying is it's not enough. He needs a little variety in there.
Right.
And you know, there's so many different ways to stimulate your brain. I'll rattle off a few, but these may be a little complex for him right now at 99, but one is to do a little bit of art. One is, is he musically inclined?
No.
No. So it's probably not the right best time to say, hey, learn to play the piano. But for other persons, people it might be, or, you know, some other musical instrument, or to bring it back. I like to write. For me, that's my it's one of my intellectual challenges. My wife, as I mentioned, is a painter. That's one of hers. And you say, well, wait, painting? Why is that a challenge? And she'll respond to you, well, I got to think about what it is, how I'm going to compose it, thinking about the different colors I'm going to use,
yep.
How am I going to, you know, and so on.
And watercolors.
And
it's
watercolor
tough,
too.
Is
and
tough. Let me
it's
tell you
tough.
That.
You got it.
That is tough stuff right there. It's like you're building the picture backwards in terms of the way
yeah.
you put your colors together. Not at my Gabby paints with watercolors and it's amazing. But I think what you're saying here is, again, it's up to us. So I have to think about what makes me happy. You know, where do I get my, it's really, that's the key. Right, is about happiness. It's am I happy with my life and what I'm doing? And it doesn't have to, I don't have to be out necessarily changing the world, you know, but if I'm contributing and I feel good about it. And it may require my dad, for example, to stop and think, well, you know, what sort of things give me pleasure? And playing bingo does, and playing spinners does. It's a domino game. He likes that. But now we need to help him look for some other things that might give him pleasure. And I think you know, it's we're back to the why thing. You know, if you're not filling your time with intellectually stimulating activities, and it's not that every minute has to be full of something thoughtful to do, but the question is why? You know, why are you not doing these things? Why aren't you practicing art? Why? I had I'm blanking on who it was, but an isolated client, and he never played piano. And he thought about it, and you mentioned dad may be too old to learn piano or whatever, but this guy just bought one of these little toy keyboards and put it in his house, and he just started sitting there. He would just dinkle around on it or whatever, piddle around. He didn't take lessons or anything like that. But the last time I visited him, he would sit there and play that piano for an hour a day. And it just, he was making stuff up, right? He wasn't, when he just was making sounds that gave him pleasure on the piano, and now he's got something he's really excited about.
Yeah, it's interesting. We were having lunch with some old friends, friends of many years, but they were also older. the guy was saying that he had just gotten himself recently one of those keyboards, and he's learned how to play the piano. He says, I missed this all my life. This is wonderful.
Well, and then back to technology. I mean, with the internet, and you can learn anything. It's all out there. You know,
yes.
Mr. Google I talk about. Just go asking, you know.
Yes.
How do I learn to play the piano? And you're going to get
right
1,000 YouTube videos that will walk you right through that process. And again, I think the challenge here, you know, we're about discovering cutting edge technologies and information and knowledge to help us improve the quality of our life. And I think the internet can be a hugely negative thing, but only just like food. You know, if I use it poorly and I make bad decisions, okay, not too good. But the reality is we can do hugely positive things. We've got the rising billion people in this world today that are moving into independence and knowledge, and, you know, nobody's going to be left out as time goes on here because of this technology. You know, we could talk for hours, right? But I think we've burned up our time here for today's show. But it's been very exciting and stimulating, and you know, we want to continue this conversation in another number, of different topics as time goes on here. So again, you folks, go to the website, Being Young at Any Age. We'll have contact information for Dr. Schimpf up there for you. I'll give you information how you can get a hold of his book. I highly recommend it. So please check it out. It's beingyoungatanyage.com. Just spell it straight out, beingyoungatanyage.com. If you want to reach us by phone, it's 303-388-8887. Again, this is George Bentley, your host of Being Young at Any Age. Thanks for joining us. We'll help you create your own self-directed roadmap to optimal happiness, wellness, and vitality, no matter what your current challenges. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to Being Young at Any Age with George Bentley. Tune in next weekend to learn how to create a roadmap to achieve happiness, health, and wellness today on EZ 1430.